Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors, and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen. 411 Teen is a weekly program for teens and other interested folks. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine and discuss various issues and events that confront, intersect, and sometimes interrupt our daily lives. I'm Dr. Liz Holyfield. Olivia Richmond is a third-year medical student at the American University of Antigua College of Medicine. She's using YouTube to talk to teens about the female reproductive system in an entertaining and educational way. Olivia was inspired after she realized that her 10 girl cousins, all under the age of 25 and educated in good school systems, did not understand the basics of the female reproductive system. Aside from being a hardworking medical student, Olivia hosts a YouTube channel, Glamourpuss MD. Her goal is to use YouTube to talk to teens about the female reproductive system in an entertaining and accurate manner. She launched the channel in August 2017. Olivia joins us from New Jersey. Olivia, welcome to 411 Teen.
Hi, Dr. Holyfield. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, and thank you for joining us. Would you share how you got the idea to start Glamourpuss MD?
Well, like you said, I have a lot of younger female cousins, and they were all educated in very good school systems, but they still did not have a basic understanding of the female reproductive system. And so throughout their teen years, they would come to me for advice, how to put in a tampon, or what are STDs, and that's what got me the idea. If my younger cousins, who are educated in a good school system, didn't know the basics of their body, what are other girls doing across the country?
Yeah, I would think so. What kind of education did they receive? Or I guess they didn't receive any. But, I mean, what was the basics? What was the of their sex education that they received in their high school?
Well, I guess I'm not sure exactly what they did receive, but I know what they didn't receive. So, for example, like I said, how to put in a tampon. That's just when I was growing up, and when they're now in high school and college, they are not taught that either. And I think it's something, of course, that's incredibly important. And if you do not have a mother or a sister or another female figure in your life, or if you're not comfortable talking about that with a female figure in your life, then where do you learn that stuff from?
That makes sense. Now, the medical school that you attend, American University of Antigua College of Medicine, really encourages, I guess, students to practice medicine in underserved communities, inner cities, rural areas. Was there something that even happened there that inspired you to continue to build on your YouTube channel?
So the medical school I attend, American University of Antigua College of Medicine, they would have us go out into the communities. And I remember this one time going to a healthcare center, an OBGYN clinic, and a 14-year-old girl came in, and she was pregnant and confused and didn't know how this happened. And it's sad because you realize how little education there is, not only in Antigua, but also in underserved communities in the United States. I also, my medical school also sent me to Baltimore to do a hospital rotation, and you see the same thing there. The adolescents are not educated on sex or how to prevent STDs or what ovulation is. You know, if they understand the process of ovulation, that prevents an unwanted pregnancy.
What kind of sex education did you receive when you were in school? Did you receive any? Did you find it beneficial? Or were you really in the same shape that your young cousins were?
I think if I solely had the education of my school system, I think I would be in the same position as they were in. Mm-hmm. I was very fortunate, and I had a mother who also is a doctor, and she was very open about talking about sex to my sister and I when we were younger. So I felt that I had a very, very thorough base of mm-hmm. what sex was and what STDs were and everything that had to do with my reproductive anatomy. I felt very well versed in that subject, but I think that's only because my mother was a doctor and she was very adamant about teaching us all the correct terms for our anatomy.
Mm-hmm. As you compare the teens in the U.S. to the teens in Antigua, what would you say are the similarities, are the dissimilarities, or maybe there aren't any, because it sounds like the basic is just lack of education.
Yeah. I would say that. I would say one of the biggest similarities, though, between the teens in Antigua and the teens here in the U.S. is that sex is still a taboo topic.
Okay.
Even the anatomy of the woman is a taboo topic. And the word vagina is a word that people are embarrassed to say or girls and guys giggle about. And so I would say that that's definitely a similarity. And for me, that's one of my main goals of my YouTube channel, Glamour Plus MD. It's for teenagers to become comfortable with those words, because if we're comfortable with those words, like vagina and penis, so then we could talk about sex in a much more open manner, and we won't, parents won't feel embarrassed to talk about it with their children.
And how do you foster that comfort? I ask that because they're still in their environment. So you have one who may feel more comfortable, but if they're in an environment that it's still a taboo and they're receiving all of their information inaccurately, I mean, how do you make inroads to that? What have you done?
Well, in my YouTube channel, in the first few episodes, or even throughout the first season where I'm talking about STDs and ovulation, I'm making sure to use these terms, such as vagina or sex or penis, in a very cool and comfortable way. So I myself am a millennial, so I feel that I can connect with teens who are watching my program. And so my hope is that they see that these words are okay to use. I reuse them in a fun way, lots of pop-ups, lots of sound effects, and I make it a very comfortable platform to talk about these issues and reiterate many times that even if you do get an STD, it's not anything to be embarrassed about, but mm-hmm. do what you can to prevent yourself from getting STDs, and that's my main message.
Mm-hmm. Well, when you say a comfortable way, for my listening audience, can you give us an example of how you have adapted to make it comfortable yet accurate and, you know, entertaining at the same time?
Right. So I would say it's comfortable because I have had 10 years of practice with this with all my younger cousins.
Mm-hmm.
So for the past 10 years, since they were 13 until now they're 23 and 24, I've been discussing all of these issues with them. And that's how I believe I make it comfortable. I'm very much used to talking about it. The way I make it accurate is through medical school. So my medical school, as you said before, but it's an American University of Antigua College of Medicine. The information that I learned there, going through physiology and anatomy of the female reproductive system, that's how I make it accurate. I reference my textbooks, and I make sure that everything I'm saying is in a manner that is easy to understand and grasp.
What would you identify as the major issues that you see, and why would you identify them?
The major issue, well, besides the issue of the lack of education, mm-hmm. like we were saying, which I think is the number one issue. I think the lack of education is the number one issue here. But I think what is equally important is how uncomfortable the topic is still in our society. It's an uncomfortable topic, then it's going to be more difficult to educate our teens about it. If we make the topic interesting and fun and similar to how girls talk about makeup or movies or books, then this topic of STDs and ovulation and how not to get pregnant could be just as fun and interesting as all the other topics that we like talking about. So on my channel, on Glam with SMD, that's how I present the information.
Do you feel that our society, and when I say our, I mean here in the United States, is obsessed with sex? Do you find that an issue?
Obsessed?
Yes, obsessed. I mean, you know, we use it to sell toothpaste. We use it to sell cars.
Wow.
I mean, everything that you turn to appears to have some type of sexual direct or indirect relationship. Yeah. And I'm wondering, you know, if that is what you are encountering. And in addition, do you see that same thing in Antigua? I mean, is it the same? Now, I'll let you think about it because we're going to take a brief break. But we'll come right back. And I just want to get an idea, because what I'm trying to do is compare the teens here in the United States to where you are, where you're doing your medical training, and see, you know, how it's handled there. Is unwed birth the same? Statistics? So anyhow, I'm going to take a quick break. You're tuned in to 411 Teen. We're going to take a break, but we'll return momentarily. If you're just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen. I'm talking with Olivia Richmond. She's a third-year medical student at the College of Medicine at the American University of Antigua. We went on break, but we're back now, and I'd like to have you respond to the issues, Olivia.
So I don't think teens are obsessed with sex.
Mm-hmm.
I think teens have a normal amount of sex drive, whatever quote unquote normal is. But I do think the media hypersexualizes things. Maybe that gives teens a different perspective on what sex is like, or how to have sex, or what to look like for their sexual partners. But obsessed with sex, I don't think so. One of their main goals, probably, if they are, you know, hormonal and in those teen years, wanting to have sex.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't really mean teens. I mean the society. I mean our society. I mean we present everything with not, you know, and that's a generalization, but it's a pretty accurate, with a sexual overtone to it. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking about the message that sends to all who are watching. And I don't know if that's what I'm really referring to. Not so much teens. They can't help but be, you know, concerned and somewhat involved because it's promoted. I mean, it seems like we may be sending them, we against society, may be sending them a double message here in the United States. Everything is sexualized, yet we don't want them. It's taboo. You can't talk about it, and we certainly don't want you to know the accurate information.
Right.
That's exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree with that, though. It's everything is hypersexualized, mm-hmm. and we can't talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's difficult. That's very difficult for people everywhere, regardless of where it is or mm-hmm. what age they are. I don't know what else to say about that or even have a solution for
mm-hmm.
it. But I know what you mean. I agree with that.
Okay. What's your position on teaching sex education in the schools?
I firmly believe that.
Well, I think it's a legitimate question because some people, no matter how educated they are, they really feel that it shouldn't be taught in the schools. So that's why I ask you.
Yes. No, of course. Of course. And there are actually a lot of abstinence-only programs mm-hmm. In schools, so it is a legitimate question. I just don't see why not. I mean, it's education. It's if we educate children about reproductive system, we could decrease teen pregnancy, unwanted teen pregnancies.
Mm-hmm.
We could decrease the rate of STDs. People will just be more knowledgeable overall about the topic of sex. I don't see how that is how there could be any negative consequences. I know the other side of that is if we teach it to them, then they'll want to go have sex. But
yeah, right.
That's human nature.
Right.
You know, that's what procreation is. Teenagers will turn into adults and then adults will be having sex and procreate, and
right.
that's just what happens.
Just from your readings and your interaction, we know that this is a very controversial topic. Why do you think something so natural is so contentious?
Mm.
I mean, it just doesn't make sense. You know, to me, and I mean, this may just really be a rhetorical question. I don't expect you to have the answer to it. But like you said, you're a millennial, and I'm just wondering what your take is on it.
Yeah, that baffles me as well. The only thing I could think is just there's such deep-seated roots of sex in our society, in our culture. I don't know if it comes from the Puritan thoughts of what sex meant, but it doesn't make much sense to me either. I don't have an answer here.
Mm-hmm.
I wish I did.
No. I didn't expect you to, but I just kind of wanted to pick your brain and just to see, you know, what you are encountering, what is your take on this? Do you think, for example, that religion plays a role in one's attitude about sex and sex education?
Yes, definitely. I definitely think so. I also think, though, it depends on how religious some families are, because some families are more religious than others, and so their ideas on sex might be much stricter than somebody else who is the same religion.
Mm-hmm.
I do think that religion has a lot to play with sex education.
Okay. And on the other hand, what about culture? Have you found that, that culture plays a role in determining what avenue you take?
Yeah. Again, I do think culture does. My mother is Cuban, actually, and both of her parents, my grandparents, are from Cuba. And so if you look at the Latin culture, the majority of Latin culture does not agree with being very open and talking about sex education, even talking about sex, period.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that generations can change the norms. So the norm in my family before my mom was that sex is something we do not talk about.
Okay.
But then my mom came along and she said, you know what? I think I want to change this idea of what Cuban culture is supposed to be and how they're supposed to not talk about sex. And I want to talk about sex with my children. And so she did.
Okay. All right. In your pathway, on your pathway to establishing your YouTube channel, Glamour Puss MD, what was your biggest challenge? And maybe it continues to be the biggest challenge.
Yeah, so Glamour Puss MD, it is a challenge. I only know about the medical field because I'm in med school. Mm-hmm. And I think my biggest challenge is time management. So the balance between studying for my med school exams and being at the hospital and then going home and studying, but then also editing my videos or writing my scripts or doing research. So I would say my biggest challenge is time management. I just have to give up some things that I'm loving to mm-hmm. do, like hanging out with friends or my boyfriend. But this is my mission. This is my main mission is to educate adolescents in the U.S. And also around the world.
Why did you choose to go to the College of Medicine at the University of Antigua?
Yeah, so American University of Antigua College mm-hmm. of Medicine. One of my best friends was down in Antigua at the medical school, and it's a little bit cheaper than U.S. medical schools, and she was raving about it and said, you have to come down here. It's a wonderful community, and the teachers are amazing, and the people are amazing. It's very international. You have students from all walks of life at all different ages, and I don't regret it for a second. mm-hmm. It was a very, very wonderful experience and a great education.
What are the topics that you address on your show?
So this past season, that's how I organize them is by seasons. This past season from August until the end of December, I was releasing one video a week, and they were about STDs, ovulation, how to put in a tampon, what does the external female genitalia look like, why does a girl get her period, videos like that. I would ask my cousins, I gave all my younger girl cousins and guy cousins a survey.
Mm-hmm.
About
they were your guinea pigs, huh?
What was that?
I said they were your guinea pigs, huh?
Oh, they were? Well,
yeah.
Of course they were.
Yeah.
they were very helpful, and I had my 11-year-old cousin. She came up to me, my goddaughter, and she mm-hmm. said, "She says, why do we even get periods?" And I was like, "That's a great question."
Mm-hmm.
they don't just explain that in school, or you know, talk about why do women even menstruate? What's the purpose?
Mm-hmm.
So they were very good guinea pigs and got me, I was able to get a lot of information and a lot of videos just from some of their questions.
And I'm sure they were really on top of it because you got them right from them as opposed to someone sitting in a room deciding this is what we'll talk about.
Right. It was very authentic.
Mm-hmm. Is sex viewed by teens as a rite of passage?
I would say so.
Okay.
I think you mean like losing virginity, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes. And
yeah,
having sex, losing virginity, and you know, being sexually active.
Yeah, I would say so. I think there's a lot of pressure when maybe even guys before, even younger than girls, but I think girls towards the end of high school are already feeling that pressure about losing their virginity before they get to college. Or, you know, if they're going to college, by the time they're 17 or 18 or 16, they give themselves a number. And I don't think it's a numbers game with sex. I don't think you have to be a certain age. I think it's more emotional. And I think it's very important to stay true to yourself emotionally and not what you think everyone else in the media or in society, what they're doing with their sex lives. It's up to you, and it's your choice when you want to have sex for the first time.
From your perspective, what role do the media play in getting to this point, having this attitude, having this confidence and independence to act on where one is coming from, not about their peers, not about their milieu and what everyone else is doing? I mean, I ask that because I'm asking for parents who may say, give us some clues from what you have experienced, you know, from your interaction. Give us some clues about this.
Could you rephrase that? That's
well,
clues about what?
The media and the influence that the media plays and their whole attitude about sexual activity.
You mean if it's a positive or negative attitude?
Whatever, whatever. I mean, you know, I'm not judging it. I'm just saying, you know, do you see it's is it positive? Is it negative? Is it good? Is it bad? Just what do you see? Do you see it playing a role at all in their attitude?
Yeah, I guess that the word I would use is, I think it's influential. I can't say it's positive. I can't say it's negative because I haven't done that large of a research study. But I definitely would say it's influential. You know, it's even I'm looking at magazine covers and I'm like, wow, should my butt look like that? Or should I get eyelashes like that? Is that is that what
exactly
is now? Is that what considered hot? Is that what will attract a sexual partner to me? There's a lot of thoughts that race through my head. Even me, I'm 28. So even me in the past, you know, 10 years looking at Instagram and magazine covers and looking at myself and judging myself with the women that are in media and thinking, should I look like that? Is that what is that what I'm supposed to look like? But, you know, I think a lot of it we have to realize is Photoshopped, and there's a lot of filters out there. And I even did a little experiment on my Instagram page, which is just Glamour Placenti, the same as my YouTube channel, where I posted a picture side by side, and one was a natural picture, no filter, you know, no makeup. And the other picture next to it was I was using a an app on my phone. I think it's supposedly the same one that Kim Kardashian uses. And it's a it filters your pictures for you and adds makeup and makes your face all beautiful and clean. And I put them side by side, and my message was, not every picture that you see in the media is real.
It's great.
Most of the time touched up. That's probably not the real makeup that they have on. That's probably not their true skin complexion. The majority of the time, somebody did something to that photo.
That's exactly what I'm referring to. That whole body image and the influence or the role that the media may play in young teens and older teens as far as females, period. And, you know, and they developing their body image. And that's exactly what I was asking. Do you see they do not have realistic expectations?
Right.
Okay. How suggestions that parents may use and getting their teens to a position where they feel comfortable with self. I loved your example when you said you had the two pictures, one without makeup and one, you know, that probably had all types of adjustments made.
Right. So the advice for
parents as to what they may do or what they may say or how they may handle this, you know, when they stand in the mirror and they look at themselves and think they're too thin or think they're too big. I guess they never think they're too thin. They always think they're too heavy. You know, suggestions that you may make.
Well, I guess the suggestions I have would just be what my mom did, because that's the only thing that I know. One of them is that I was barely on social media because I was so busy. My mom packed my schedule from a.m. till 6 a.m. until 10:30 p.m. In high school, I had no free time, even on Friday night, because I was a competitive gymnast. So I got into a very competitive sport, so did my sister. And so because of that, we had no time to even go hang out with friends or go be on Instagram for 30 minutes. There was no time for that. On weekends, we were traveling and competing. And so I think that, number one, really helped me out a lot. The only competition that I was worrying about were my gymnastics competitions, not my competition with women that I saw in the media. So I think that was, for me, that just completely changed my perspective on myself. I did not compare myself with other girls because of that, because I had very little time to do some things like that.
You're tuned in to 411 Teen. We're going to take a brief break, but I will return and continue my conversation with Olivia Richmond.
Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
If you're just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen, a weekly program for teens and other interested folks. This hour, I'm talking with Olivia Richmond. She's a med student, a third-year med student at the University, American University of Antigua, at the College of Medicine. She has started a very unique YouTube channel, and that is providing information on female sexual reproductive issues. We are glad to have her again, Olivia. As we talk about these issues, what would be the advice that you might give to teens and their parents about having conversations concerning these issues? Because I know you've said the key is that we have to feel comfortable. And not only the teens, but the parents have to feel comfortable too. And another concern is that the parents are able to offer accurate information. So what suggestions, if any, would you make?
Well, I think it would be important to treat talks about sex just like any other talk. It's not taboo. If you make this conversation about sex with your teenager something that is comfortable, then they will feel comfortable coming to you and talking to you about these issues, whether they're having a problem with a boyfriend or a girlfriend, whatever the problem they may have, they'll be much more comfortable talking to you and coming to you as a parent. So if if we use this conversation of sex and use words such as vagina or penis as any other word, just like eyeball or foot, then they won't be uncomfortable conversations. And that is my advice that I also give on Glamour Plus MD on my channel. about how to use these words and why these words are not taboo?
Well, you know, sexual health education addresses a lot of things. When we say that, we think about reproductive health, but we're also talking about interpersonal relationships, affection, body image, gender roles, contraceptive options, and all of these things. So I'm thinking that may be one way for parents to feel more comfortable is to talk about something that falls in these categories that they feel more comfortable with. And maybe as they become more accustomed and feel more at ease, they can move into another area that they may not feel as comfortable. I don't know. Do you think that would be a way to go? I'm just trying to come up with ideas and options that those whom are listening, who may be parents or teachers or whomever, may find helpful in addressing these controversial issues, even though I don't know why they're controversial. It's just life, okay? But they are controversial issues. So do you think that's a good idea to approach it that way?
Yeah.
Or, you know, are there other suggestions that you may offer that you have found to be helpful?
Well, I guess the advice I could give to adults who are uncomfortable talking about these issues mm-hmm. is figure out why you're uncomfortable talking about these issues. If you yourself are uncomfortable about the topic of sex and talking about it, then it's going to be uncomfortable if you bring it up with your teenager. Or, you know, like you said, if it's a teacher-student relationship. If the adult is uncomfortable saying the word vagina or sex or penis, then that, I think, is where the problem lies. And we have to figure out whether that's cultural, whether that's religious, what the reason is. Maybe that's just societal. Whatever the reason is, I think the adult, before they go and talk to their teenager, has to get over that, whatever the reason is. But it's something that I think is worth confronting and saying, it's just another word. It's just another topic. You know, who cares what I was taught when I was little and that my parents never talked to me about it. I can change a generation. I could help out my kids more. And I could talk about it, and it's okay to talk about.
Whose responsibility, and this is, I know, a controversial issue in itself, whose responsibility is it to inform and educate teens on the, I guess for lack of a better way, acts of life?
Well, I would say anybody who is educated on the facts of life.
mm-hmm.
I don't necessarily think, I don't want to say, oh, adults should do it, or teachers mm-hmm. should do it, mm-hmm. or, you know, doctors should do it. I don't think that there's a specific person that should do it. I think that if you are educated on the topic and you are comfortable with the topic, and specifically if you are comfortable talking to adolescents about the topic, or even adults that don't know much about sex or how not to get pregnant or how to get pregnant, whatever the topic may be, I think it really depends on how much you know about sex education. There can be doctors who are uncomfortable with sex education just because of their religion or culture mm-hmm. or where they're from. So I don't necessarily think that a certain person has to educate our youth about sex education. I think that if you are educated and comfortable talking about it, then you definitely can hold that responsibility to educate the youth of America.
What about the role of the school? Because we're talking about education, you know, and mm-hmm. you said it, sex education. What responsibility does the school hold in education on sex, do you think?
Well, I think the school is a great platform
mm-hmm.
to use or to educate teens about sex. Because, for example, my YouTube channel, Glamour Plus MZ doesn't reach the entire nation just yet, at least. But schools are across the entire nation, and I think they have the number one ability to teach our adolescents about sex. There's no other platform that I think is better than schools. So sex educators at school, definitely, definitely, I believe, should be talking about sex.
How do you feel about a common core curriculum? Because it is basic as far as sex education is concerned. Do you think that that would help in making individuals feel more comfortable about it? If it was just a basic curriculum that should be followed. Go on.
No, I was going to say, I would agree with that. I don't see why, how that could be detrimental. But I do believe that we should at least be using the correct anatomy when children are younger. One of my theories, and it's a theory, but one of my theories is if you are 5 and 6 years old and you're using, you know, pee-pee or wee-wee instead of vagina or penis, then how are you going to be comfortable telling an adult if you're being molested or touched inappropriately? If we can't even say the words, then what message is that sending to our children? So, yes, I do believe in that basic sex education in the end of middle school and high school, but I also believe that we can be teaching just basic anatomy words to our children when they're 5, 6, 7 years old.
One of the problems may be that the parents themselves do not know the correct nomenclature, the correct words to use. Are there any resources that you would suggest that parents, you know, utilize that may aid them in talking to their kids?
Oh, man. I can't remember the book my mom told me about. It's a sex education book for kids. And then also there's books out there for adults about how to explain to your child their anatomy, you know, how to talk to them about this stuff. I do have an episode, though, on my channel on Glamour Plus MD, and it's about external female genitalia and what is all every single correct term for the external female genitalia. So if they want, we could check that episode out. But I would say Google. Everything's on Google. The images or Wikipedia or any text. You know, I think Google is one of the best resources for adults who may not know the nomenclature themselves.
What has been the response of your viewers?
Well, so far, since it is a new channel, my viewers mainly are my friends and family. But the episode that I just spoke about, what does external female genitalia look like, that one has been getting at least 100 views a week or 200 a week. I forget what it is. But it's been out for 3 months, and it's almost at 9,000 views. And the rest of my videos are not, you know, they're at 300, 400, around there. And I think the response for that, even though I haven't had verbal feedback, is that it's a very popular video with men. They want to know more about it. But I did have one very special response from a girl who messaged me actually on Snapchat, because Glamour Plus MD also has Snapchat. And she thanked me. She said to me, this is her words, "I was never taught a comprehensive sex education in school or home, just abstinence. It's really helpful, especially now that I'm adult and in college. Thank you." And so just hearing that really validated everything that I'm doing right now with my YouTube channel.
Your channel, who is it for? And, I mean, is it for parents? Do it with males? And I know the promo was, you developed this for females to learn more about their reproductive system. But is it for everyone? Who is it for?
Yeah, I started it off thinking it was going to be more female-centric. But as I've grown and thought more about it, it's for anyone who needs it. It's for parents. It's for teens. It's for boys. It's for girls. It's also on a non-hetero platform, so it's not just for heterosexual men and women out there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really for anyone who needs it. This first season was about the female anatomy, but also about STDs, and guys need to know about that as well. Adults need to know about that as well.
Exactly.
And this next season, which I'm actually in the production is this week, it's about sexual harassment and assault and consent.
Mm-hmm.
And so now I'm moving into different topics, which, again, that's not just for women. That's for men, definitely, as well. So it's for anybody who's interested in the topic.
And I know you haven't, it's new, so I recognize that. But to this point, is there any one particular issue that appears to be more popular with your viewers than others?
I think it was the one that I mentioned. The most popular Glamour Plus MD episode is what does the external female genitalia look like?
Mm-hmm.
And the 90% of the viewers are men ages 13 to 26, because YouTube can break down the analytics for you.
Okay. How often do you post new videos, and how do you, but I guess I wonder, how do you find the time to do all of this? I mean, you're a busy medical student and you're posting something, what it sounds like, pretty often. How do you juggle? I know you said that was one of your issues, just juggling your time management.
Yeah.
But how do you find the time to do all this?
Yeah. Well, I wake up at 4:30 a.m., so
okay.
that gives me some extra time for sure in the mornings. I have to turn down a lot of things that my other friends are doing. Like I said, this is my mission here is to mm-hmm. unite, educate, and empower people worldwide, and that is number one above everything. So if I have to turn down a night out, when I went to Mexico with my family over Christmas, and all I was doing by the beach was researching topics and typing and writing scripts. And
that's your passion, though. So, and I guess it's not work when you really love it, and this is something like your mission.
Right, exactly. It is passion, and I'm very mm-hmm. passionate about it. So I make time. I find time.
Okay. Unfortunately, we're talking about the internet. Many teens get their information, their sexual education, through porn. You know, the average age of the first exposure to porn is 11 years of age. What advice? We have 2 minutes left. In these last couple of minutes, I have a couple of questions I'd like to see if you could touch on. What advice do you offer parents concerning pornography? Yeah, I just said concerning pornography and sex education.
Is to give them another resource instead of porn, or in addition to porn. If it's out there and they have access to the internet, there's little, I don't know because I don't have kids, but I think there's little that you could do about that unless mm-hmm. you restrict their internet access. But I would say make them less curious by giving them the information, by talking about it with them. But in a non-judgmental way, in a way that's open and comfortable for them.
Do you think that the teens that are watching your channel, that they may be watching it because they feel uncomfortable addressing these issues with their parents?
Yes, I really do. And that's what Glamour Plus MD is about as well. It's about educating those teens who may not be comfortable talking about it or don't have anyone to talk about it with. And so I'm hoping to be their friends almost, mm-hmm. where they could just talk and chat with an educated friend who knows about this stuff and they get correct information.
Well, it appears we're out of time, but I would like to really extend my sincere appreciation and wish you a lot of peace and success with your YouTube channel.
Thank you, Dr. Hollyfield.
Yeah, thanks so much for sharing your time with us. To my listening audience, I'd like to say thank you for your time and your ear. Tune in next week to get the 411 on 411 Team. The 411 Team was produced by Dr. Liz Hollyfield. Technical assistance was provided by Ken Smith. If you would like to participate in 411 Team or have suggestions for discussion topics, call 850-645-7200. 411 Team archives are available as streaming audio and as downloads from WFSU.org. Check us out on Facebook.